Welcome to the Swirl and Sip podcast, where we keep it real, talking about womanhood, parenthood, and marriage. I'm your host, Sasha.
And I'm Sheree. And if this is your first time tuning into us, this is what you need to know about us. We're wives, we're boy moms, and we love wine, though we're not experts. This is Life Uncensored.
So get your wine glasses and your favorite bottle and get ready for today's episode. So, of course, we always like to start each episode with what we are sipping on. And today, we are having a white. It is the type of white that I prefer to drink. It's a Sauvignon Blanc. We've decided, I think we learned during season two that if it was
going to be... Sasha's learned.
Yeah, Sasha learned during season two. If it was going to be a white wine, it needed to be a Sauvignon Blanc. Although, I guess we've kind of changed that a little bit this season, though. We've had a couple.
I'd have found you a Chardonnay.
You have, which I was surprised about. So
don't you doubt my skills, okay? I am a certified lush. I will keep trying. There's enough wine in this world for me to find one for you for every occasion, okay?
Yeah, so today we are drinking. This is actually one of Sheree's personal favorites, and it was hilarious because when I was in the liquor store picking up this wine, I was convinced we had had this on the podcast already. I was like, why is this on the list? Like, I know we've had this wine. We haven't had it on the show. We've had it at wine night. And yeah. I was so sure that I had seen this bottle before. And
she texted me. It was like, are you sure we haven't had this? And I said, oh, no. We've had this. The podcast hasn't had this.
I definitely
always have this.
I was on the website looking at the wine list. Like, I know we have had this wine. Like, I've seen this bottle.
I brought it to wine night, and that is separate.
It's so hard to. We've had so many wines. So keeping track of the ones we've had, both on the show and during wine night.
Because the thing is, we keep forgetting that wine night is a whole separate. Like sometimes it's repeats, and sometimes it's new.
So we done had
over 50 wines, man.
This episode we are drinking on Sea Glass Sauvignon Blanc. It's from Santa Barbara County in California. And it says that on the palate, so it has exhilarating aromas of lemon, lime, grapefruit, and fresh cut grass. Does it smell like grass to you, Sheree?
So, yes. And I have allergies, so it is real funny because I was like, I'm allergic to cut grass. So if it's funny that I'm drinking a wine that has aromas of what I'm allergic to.
Wow, that's interesting.
Grapefruit.
It says it has a clean, crisp palate of, we've had this one show up before, gooseberry, tangerine, and a touch of minerality. That's what I
think. Okay, so did they say grapefruit?
With a light tart finish. It did say grapefruit.
That's what I taste. It tastes like grapefruit. This tastes like a pure grapefruit. And I love grapefruit. So that's probably why I adore this wine, because I like grapefruit juice. That's my favorite juice. So
really?
Yeah. So here we are. Wow. Hey, look. Hold on. Now, like, grapefruit juice to me is better than, well, not better than pineapple. It's one of my favorite. Sasha, we can't go by anything. I'm not ever using you as the litmus test. You are never going to be my litmus test of whether it's something.
I don't know. I don't think when you brought this to the house or whenever we've had this for wine night that I actually drank it.
I
like it. It's very clean. It's a very clean wine, and
you sip very it, quick. It's done. It's like there's no hover.
There's no aftertaste. It's just the flavor as soon as you're drinking, and that's it.
That's good.
So it's very clean. I think very crisp. I think they have that right. And I do taste the minerality. I can't even say the word.
Minerals. She tastes the minerals. She tastes the rocks in it.
The minerals.
That's what I think of.
So a lot of the wines we drink on the show, if you ever dive deep into their makeup, they're never 100% of whatever the variety is. Like even a Merlot is very rarely 100% Merlot.
Yeah.
Surprisingly, this is 100% Sauvignon Blanc. That's what kind of grape it is.
Wow.
100% all the way. So, and although the bottle says, you'll like this, right? The bottle says that it's 13.5%, but according to the tasting notes online, it is a 13.87%. So
I'll go by what they said.
I'm gonna go by what they said. So, Sasha, you want to know why I really picked this bottle? I told you that. In case y'all don't know, it's pretty. I just want you to know that I am the advertising person. It is so pretty. It's got like these little. It's got these little glass. Like I love sea glass.
It actually like really does mimic what it tastes like. Yeah. Like it's very just clean and
it's very clean, crisp, refreshing. It's like,
and it's a twist top.
Yeah, and it's a twist top. I mean, like, I want you to know that that's actually the first thing. It was pretty and it has a twist top. I'm like, this is the it's 13.5. check, we're ready.
Yeah, all the boxes. So you will not hear me complain about this. I do like, if I'm gonna drink a white, it is,
I was gonna say Sauvignon Blanc. I know,
yeah, it's gonna be a Sauvignon Blanc, so I'm a fan. So that's what we're drinking, Sea Glass Sauvignon Blanc today. You may have heard a couple of chuckles and an unknown voice, and that is our guest today. So we do have a guest. We are talking with Yolanda Oliver, who is the founder of the Live Fearless Less Incorporated. She says it's not a project, passion project. Ooh, Lord, I can't read. It's not a passion project for her. It's her life journey. She is one in four women who've experienced violence in a relationship. She is the 68% of children exposed to violence in her home. And not only does she survive, but she thrives. But she says that her thriving did not come without struggles, and she openly shares those. A seed of purpose was planted for her to serve women and children who are in crisis, fighting their way out of domestic violence situations with assistance to help them navigate through the struggles with support and resources as they journey to living without fear. And that is a lot of what we are talking about. So, of course, October is National Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we wanted to do an episode surrounding that. And we were super excited when you wanted to be on the podcast because we were like, oh, we have somebody who can actually talk about it.
Like, so. It works. We have a guest that can speak to this important topic, right?
Yes. And we actually wanted to focus more. What really made Sheree and I want to have you on the show is that you specifically talked about teenage dating violence for a parent's perspective and like how to teach warning signs or things to look out for. And so that's kind of what we wanted to talk about. I did find, you talked about this a little bit in your bio, but I did find one in nearly three teenagers, which is nearly 1.5, in a romantic relationship admits to being in an unhealthy relationship. Both boys and girls can be victims, of course, of teen dating violence, but girls are far more likely to suffer. Nearly 25% of teenage girls are estimated to have been in an abusive relationship. And it says, in fact, between 16 and 24 are three times as likely than any other demographic to be abused by a boyfriend or an intimate partner. And like, that's crazy, but also not surprising because young girls put up with a lot of shit.
I mean, that's what I was going to say. Like, so welcome.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be here on your platform to share about this important topic because, as you shared from my bio, that I started in my first domestic violence relationship when I was 19. So not going through repair of that first relationship and going through healing to understand why I attracted that person to me, it ended up in me being in multiple domestic violence relationships. So at one point I said, you know, I had two physically, they were physically, emotionally, psychologically abusive. And then at some point around 23, I said, I'm not going to let anybody hit me anymore. However, I still went through the psychological abuse, and the emotional abuse, and even down to financial abuse. And I was in domestic violence relationships for almost 2 decades.
Wow.
2 decades from when I was 19. And I left my last domestic violence relationship when I was 38. So 38, 39, because I'm 47 now. So yeah, 38.
Where? For 47.
Where? Wait a second. When she said 2 decades, I want you to know. I was like, she said 19, wait, 2 decades. Wait a second. I was like, wait.
Yeah.
Sorry, just to say, you look amazing.
Thank you so much.
Hashtag Black Don't Crack. Okay. But no, but that is a very important topic to understand. Like you just said, healing, if you don't heal, then you will repeat or you don't learn how to avoid those situations. And that is exactly why it's so important to talk about it.
Absolutely. And it's the baggage. So you carry the baggage from one relationship to another. And it's how do we release the baggage? And I love the facts that you shared about teenage dating violence, because it's so important. I know the importance of it. I have an 18-year-old son. Mm-hmm. And not only do I have to be mindful of him not being an abuser, but I also have to be mindful that he does not get abused, because we fail to remember that not only do males are abusers, we have females who are abusers as well. Maybe not always physically, but verbally the abusive, psychologically the abusive, and they can be just as aggressive as men, just maybe not in a physical way. So, you know, it's so important for us as parents to look out for the signs, to have conversations with our children. And I always say, for me, the thing that woke me up out of saying I cannot be in these type of relationships anymore is because my son looks at me like he's so sensitive to, like, when I'm sad, he'll know to come and hug me. He has such a sensitivity about me and my emotions. So if he's sitting here and he's seeing somebody do this to me, he's thinking, hey, that's okay. You know, that man's making my mom sad. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. And I always say that the biggest thing for me, I always talk about, is creating those foundations of what healthy relationships look like for our children as they're young. Yeah, what does healthy communication look like? How do you deal with conflict in a way that is healthy? Those are the things that we need to start teaching our kids when they're young. So then, and then not only that, because we can't just talk about it, we have to be it. So we have to be the example of it ourselves, because they mirror what they see.
So many good points. So yeah, like, you're just hitting on so much.
I was going to say, you know that. So you know that I work in a high school.
I could go on forever. No, we got to stop.
That's why I said, don't worry. Because I'm a high school social worker. I'm a counselor in a school. I do a program on interpersonal dating violence, and like how I remember last year when I was talking about doing it, and it's like the guys were the ones that was like, yeah, because these girls be thinking of that. And I'm like, I'm looking in the hallways and I'm just like, sweetie, you can't punch him in the face. Like, what are you doing? Like, I'm looking at this and I'm like, sweetie, you can't punch him in the face and take his phone and demand that he, like, that's just as abusive as if he did it. And a lot of times we forget, like I always say, everybody keep their hands to themselves and like all the rest, because like, nah, everything on both sides.
You said a couple of things that stood out to me. First, like with your story where you said you kind of went from the physical to, you know, you said, I'm not going to take that anymore, but then continued on with psychological and verbal. And I think there's such a stigma, or, you know, there's this assumption that, you know, teen violence or any sort of domestic violence is physical, and that's all that it is. And we forget about the other pieces, like the psychological effects of, like, oh, you can't go nowhere, or you can't do anything without checking in, or, you know, the controlling aspects of things, like that's very much abusive, like people who are manipulative. And like, that's what sticks out to me when it comes to boys and violence, or, you know, domestic violence, because I do think most females know that they are not at all stronger than whoever they are dating. I think the ones who are violent will use the, you can't hit a girl as an excuse to do whatever they want to their guys. But women in general, we're very good at playing to men's sensitivities and being manipulative and saying things like, well, if you love me, like, you won't do this.
It's a very emotional and psychological thing. And I know that it's an unpopular opinion, because it's like, oh, it's not victim blaming. I'm like, it's just recognizing that both parties can be a victim. And I think that it's downplayed that a healthy relationship takes two healthy individuals.
That's right.
And that's the thing that we seem to forget. Like, yes, just because someone doesn't put their hands on you doesn't mean that they can't be abusive, because a lot of times that's the other thing. And then also, just because somebody has put their hands on you and like done nothing else, I'm like, no, there's still something wrong there. We have to recognize that if you know how to, I know how to push my husband's buttons. I don't.
Yeah, everybody in a relationship, of course you do.
I also know that he won't, like, I know what his limits are, and I know that where he will not go. But at the same time, I'm not getting ready to step and continue to step and continue to step and continue to step where I'm just like, hold up.
Right.
He's never done anything to let me, but even when he gets so angry, I'm like, hey, hi, I don't need you to get that angry because that scares me. And I need you to know that. He's like, I won't hit you. And I say, I hear you, but that still scares me. And I don't need you to do that.
I honestly think that, and this is probably a very unpopular opinion, everybody has a breaking point.
Yeah.
I don't think there are some people who are obviously abusers and like they get a kick out of it and that's who their personality
is. Yeah, it's control. Yeah.
It's a control thing. I think though that we also have to be aware, like you said, of pushing people's buttons, because you can push people to a point where they will come out their spirit and not be who you thought they are in that moment.
Right.
And then they're going to look at themselves. They're going to be all be like, oh shit, I done fucked up. And you know, now you looking at them like, hold up. Like what? That's not what's going on.
It's a matter of when we talk about
human nature.
Yeah. It's about when we talk about interpartner violence and domestic violence. I think that it get like the message that everyone gets caught up in is, well, no man ever or no person should ever hit a woman. And I'm like, yes, agree, true statement. Very true statement. That does not mean that men, like it's also sometimes takes men out of the realm of being a human as well. And it's like, when we're talking about healthy relationships, it's like everybody has to know what those healthy signs are. And like you said, you're raising a young man who at this point 18 is he ain't a man yet. I don't care. He halfway grown, because I don't believe 18 legal. Is grown. He legal, but he ain't grown. But at 18, exactly. But at 18, he is fully able to go out on his own. So everything that you've instilled in him, like you said, you were like, he's sensitive to knowing, is this how I should be treating people? This is what I've seen. Because I know that one of the statistics that I remember seeing is that I think it was 50%, it's two times as likely if you've witnessed DV to be a part of or be in a relationship either on either side, whether it be the abuser or the victim.
Well, and especially on the victim side, because you wouldn't know in your mind is what you see. So how would you, that's how people show love as far as you're concerned.
Right.
So, yeah.
You know, for my example is my dad abused my mom for years. So at the age of 11, when I was 11, she left once. He, you know, got his way back in. We went back home. Then the second time, you know, he made all the promises. And the second time she left, we left for good. And that's when I moved to Harlem before we were in Queens.
Mm-hmm.
And, so what I saw, like from the beginning, from my youth, I can remember the days where me and my brother didn't sleep because we heard my dad beating on my mom at night. So that for me in my early development years instilled in me fear, shame, because I had to pretend all the time that everything was okay when it wasn't. I'm masking pain and fear my entire life. And to me, I walked out with a jaded view of what a relationship looks like.
Yeah.
So to me, love looked like, oh, he's going to be aggressive. He's going to yell. He's going to act jealous because that's what I saw my dad do.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's why I would say it's important for us. It's painful and nobody wants to talk about this topic. It's not fun. It's not fancy. Mm-mm. It's not the best last thing popping. But as parents, it's our responsibility to make sure that we understand what our children are going through. If we've experienced abuse, we say they can't hear it, they can't see it. That's lies.
No,
that's all lies.
It's so much all more lies. Intuitive than we give them credit for. They know it, they see it, they feel it, and they deserve the opportunity to share what that experience does for them and also the opportunity to heal. Me and my brother, we used to be up at night in we had a 2-3-story house. We were up on the top floor. We could hear everything. We knew, you know, when my dad came home, we knew if he came home in a bad mood, if he had too much alcohol, it was going to be a problem. You know, it's
that was going to be one of my questions. The alcohol. I feel like alcohol and domestic abuse go
very much so.
You know, the one thing that I can say, like, I'm proud to share my story because I love the fact that my father did the work. You know, he did the birth. But my dad, you know, my mom left, they'd been divorced. And, you know, but they each went through their healing process separately till they could come together and be friends. And then they can build a relationship, my dad with me and my brother again, and try, you know, and make things whole where they were so broken. But the thing that for children is that we have to understand that sometimes parents, they don't want to admit that it's happening, because then that means that they feel it's their fault for what has, what the results that it's had on their children.
It's a protective thing.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's the shame that goes with it. It's, I can't believe that I allowed this to happen to my child. So you carry that as a parent for a long time, but we have to come to grips and accept it, because until we accept it, we can't heal and we can't get our children the healing that they need. And without that healing, it doesn't break the cycle. So as much as my mother did, you know, my mother left my dad in an unconventional time. People like trashed her name and shamed her because she had the strength to walk away. Now, these were people who their husbands were doing the same thing to them, but they didn't have the strength to leave.
It's my just like, you know what? That's just what happens. And you just take it, and you just deal with it.
Yeah. Back in the day, that's just what it was. Like,
we sit there and it's like, what's wrong with this generation?
Do they pay the bills? Are they supporting you? Do they take care of the kids? Yes, then that's just what you got to deal with.
Right.
So did your mom, when you started having these relationships and, you know, you're starting to go through the same thing that you, you know, saw your mom going through, did she like feel like guilty about it? Did she tell you like, I went through this and you need to get out? Did she say anything about it? Or was it kind of
my
just,
mother,
know, she turned the black
my
eye?
My mother knew nothing. Like I said, I used to tell people, I said it used to be, because when I tell you, I hadn't told my story until maybe 6 years ago. So that was like, I was already 40. When I tell you, people are like, how is that possible? I literally went to work every single day. I never missed a day of work. You talk about somebody who can mask pain like no other, that was me. So nobody knew. And I think my biggest fear of sharing anything with my mom or any of my family is that, you know, people would get hurt. Like, I know my family, they wasn't gonna play. Like, bodies would be buried.
And the thing is, a lot of people seem to like underestimate the fact of like, oh no, it's, I'm doing this to protect you. To be honest, I'm doing this to protect you. Like, I have an older brother, I promise you. Like, I've had a situation where I got into it with a boy in high school, and it wasn't even that big. And my brother was just like, what's going on? Are you okay? And I was just like, no, I'm fine. I am okay. Cause you're going to kill this little boy. And I knew then that I was like, oh, I need to be very careful of what I say to my brother. So I can only, like you said, I can imagine if I found myself in a situation where I was like, I have, because we also fail to realize that we do still, we're talking about people who we do have feelings and care for. Right. Even though we're talking about an abusive relationship, that does not negate that there are feelings, there's love, there's like a whole relationship that is in it.
You have like during those relationships and when all that's going on, I mean, it's not, I would imagine it's not like the person's coming out right off the bat, like being like that, you know, they will, they're nice to you, you know, at the
beginning. It's a beautiful thing.
They tell you all the things you want to hear. They love you. They're so nice to you. They take care of you. And then something happens and then it's like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, you made me do this, or, you know,
then you'll be like, I still love you. And then we say, oh, you know what? I did do that. I did push that button, or maybe I did this. And then it's calm, like we talk about,
you just
the cycle.
It escalates, just rationalizing
honeymoon stage to that incident stage and the abusive stage, and then it goes back to the honeymoon stage. It's a cycle. And the one thing that I want, especially for young girls and young boys, is we as a community, I always say we all have a village of people. It's not just our parents, us, the parents, but let's engage our communities to support and love on our kids. So whether that be aunties, uncles, friends, everybody, like just encourage them, motivate them, inspire them, and let them know that they deserve so much more than what they may think that they deserve. I think for me, I suffered, like I said, I lived in a, because I was fearful all the time, like when I was younger in my elementary school where I lived out in Queens, I had no friends. The kids used to bully me. They used to laugh at me. when I tell you, like, I was like fearful, like I've even peed on myself in class. My teacher was so mean. She wouldn't let me use the bathroom. Oh. When I raised my hand, I would, you know, literally pee on myself in the class. I had no friends. So from there, you carry that into like that insecurity and the fear and like not wanting to get to know anybody. When when we moved to Harlem, like everybody wanted to be my friend. I was like, what? Y'all want to be my friend?
Why? Like, you're like, why?
What? Right. Why? And are you kidding me? But it still didn't take away, even though you could call that people wanting to be your friends and you become a little popular, it still didn't take away that fear. Like I still was fear, insecure. And the real side of my life, nobody knew. Like nobody knew that, you know, my dad abused my mom. I used to say, we used to have the best parties in my house. Like my house was the party house. So if you can imagine back in the 70s, late 70s, you know, we had the pool table in the basement. We had the stereo.
Oh, you had the party house.
We had the party house. We had the full pool table. We had this full bar in the basement. We had the living room. The sofas and everything. People come there for Christmas, everything, because me and my brother were like the kids of the family, the babies. So everybody would come for everything. But it was when people left, it was like we wanted them to stay forever because it was good when they were there. Yes.
You knew that the door is like that door closes and then it's like the cold comes over. And they're like,
right.
And that's starting. Right.
So
well, I think something too that you, what you pointed out though, is like those insecurities and fears that you have, people who are the type to abuse people physically, mentally, emotionally, any of that stuff, they pick up on all of that.
Yes.
It's very easy for them to look at somebody and be like, oh, she's super insecure. All I got to do is tell this little girl she look cute a couple of times and she gonna love me, she gonna trust me. I just gotta build her up a little bit
and you know how much
so
they need.
Far broken. Exactly. Like, so it's just manipulative behavior.
But you know what else I think of as well is that like you said, you touched on something that I completely agree with. Community. There's so many things that go on. And I say this, like I said, working in a high school, the dudes, I had a group, bless them. I had a group of seniors, bless their souls, but they would barge into my office, all of them. And they're just sitting there going around talking about these stories and telling like the things that's going on. And I'm like, thankfully they were sitting there in the therapist's office trying to like figure things out. Right. But the things they're saying, I'm like, hey, sweetie, that's abuse. So like, she shouldn't do that to you and you shouldn't do that to her. So y'all fight. What do you mean y'all fight? Like what? That's not a good relationship.
No.
And they don't have someone, like most people don't have their boys telling them, hey, dude, the way you like being controlling, because these bless them, I'm getting ready to say this generation. Oh my gosh. And am I getting ready to say this?
It's different.
Kids, am I getting ready to say kids these days? I am. Kids these days really don't, but they really do. But there's a blurred boundary in what a relationship looks like. That's the reason why I do the healthy relationships, because they get together and immediately, you know, the passwords. Oh, we're in a relationship, so he has my password to all my Instagram. Who has what? I don't understand this.
Yeah.
They have their social media passwords. They have the ability to get in their phone. They answer messages for each other. Oh, yeah, so this dude texts me, but my boyfriend texted him. I'm like, I don't understand how, but once again, so having a conversation with the younger generation, especially as we get into more technologically savvy people, we need to let them understand that boundaries still exist in the digital world. Like they'll send a message out, they send out a picture to someone, and then their friends send it out to their friends. And it's like, oh, I'm mad at you, so I posted a video of you. And I'm like, these things aren't okay.
Right. And it's so bad. And it's crazy because especially in this digital age, like that digital abuse is like, it's beyond, like blows my mind. And like you said, boundaries is communication and healthy relationship and boundaries. Those are the three things that we need to teach our children is boundaries. And you have the right to set boundaries. And if you're in a relationship with someone who does not respect your boundaries, then that's not a relationship that you should enter, because they need to know. And I would say, even as adults, I'm like, sometimes we don't even know how to set boundaries. It took me a long time to do that myself. I'm just getting it right.
Look, the thing is, like,
we already have had these conversations about that. We ask our kids and we want our kids to do better than us. So it's like, we can recognize that we're still working on it, right. But we're like, we don't want you to go through this. Right. So, but no, it's very true. Like my husband has my password. He can I literally forget that he has my password because we never use it. But right. Like, I'll say, hey, look at my phone. And he's just like, dude. And I'm like, oh yeah, you do have my password. I have right. his password.
Because he also respects you enough to be like, yeah, I have your password, but that doesn't mean that it is mm-hmm. like I need to be going into your phone. Like, that's the mm-hmm. difference. And I think,
like, if his like, phone dings, I'm not getting ready to look.
Boundary.
Right. But I think
Sasha, we already know you also have had some. Look, we ain't getting into the things that you done did because it's, you know, hands to yourself. Look, Sasha, we not getting into your negative. Your negative.
I was the girl in college who was. You know, I remember
she was this one. She was this one. You ain't getting ready to be
the one all like this.
Sasha is Puerto Rican. And I'm going to just say Sasha's Puerto Rican and she like lived up to her stereotypes very well.
Oh, I was crazy in my youthful days. Like I remember being in the car one time. I don't even know we were having a serious argument, but I like smooched the shit out of his mm-hmm. face.
And he remember that word, smooch?
Pissed at me.
Smooch, yes. Oh, remember that word?
You taking me back to the 80s, girl?
He was in a driver's seat, so it was I pushed like to the window and he would just looked at me and I was like, oh, I shouldn't have done that. That probably was a little mad. And I definitely overstepped my boundaries. Like, I was the type in college, we would get into arguments, I'm throwing stuff at him, like breaking stuff. We get into I think we were in one time we were in a stairwell arguing with each other. And he, because I'm like going at him.
Mind
like
you,
I would hit him.
My husband is 6'3". So yeah. There we are.
Exactly. He's 6'3". I'm 5'2". So I'm like, just like, oh, I'm so mad at him. I'm swinging at him and stuff. And he's like trying so hard to just not like to get me to calm down. So he just wraps me up so I can calm mm-hmm. down. What's real funny, Kevin, mm-hmm. one of our friends' mm-hmm. husbands, he's coming down a stairwell. He immediately just turns right back around and goes up. He was like, nope, I'm not. Whatever y'all are doing, I'm not here for
I'm
it.
Not here for
y'all
it.
Y'all need to work that stuff out.
This is between right. y'all. So this and is how often it was.
And it really wasn't until after probably by senior year of college that I was like, you know what? I shouldn't do that stuff because one day he gonna knock my ass out and I really can't be mad about it because I'm pushing every button.
Like you, of his, I am physically, right.
with the mentality, like, oh, he's
man.
Not gonna hit me. He's not gonna hit me.
No, and I think
I had to grow up.
So I've only had one incident where, like, me and him, I am more physical. I grew up with a older brother. So the way I play is more rough and physical. Mm-hmm. I know that. And I know that my husband has told me, hey, I didn't grow up, like, he didn't grow up with an older brother. And I now realize that it makes a difference because I am a fighter, like real play fight. And I'm like, jump on your back, roll around. Like, I'm a WWE.
This?
And he's like, you are a girl. And I'm like, nah. But I remember being very angry one time. And it was only one time that this happened. We were just started dating. I was so mad. I don't even remember the argument, but it was a blowout argument. And I slapped him. I slapped it was the dog shit. Hey. This is literally the, you know how I slapped him and immediately and I walked into the bathroom because I was in my room. I walked into my adjacent bathroom and I was in the bathroom telling myself, fuck. Damn, I gotta apologize. That was so wrong. I crossed the line. I do not mm-hmm. need to do that. If you know mm-hmm. what? And I was just like, we broke up. I'm pretty sure that we broke up. If he left out the room, then we definitely broke up. And I can't say that I wouldn't understand why we broke up because I just slapped the dog shit out of him. And I knew, because I grew up, like you said, I grew up seeing arguing. I grew up seeing volatile arguments. So I'm like, oh, I know it's not right. But I definitely was like, I went out there. He was still there. I said, well, we're still together because he definitely is still there. But I said, I'm sorry. I should not have ever slapped you. And it was like, I was angry still, but I had to apologize. It was the angriest apology ever. But that was me recognizing that I said, I will not do that again.
Right.
Because that's wrong. Right. So, I mean, but so the reason that we have to say these things is because a lot of people feel like in those heated moments, it's like those things are wrong too. Now, does that mean that if he was to haul off and like throw me across the room and beat my ass? Nah, that's still not right.
That's what I was about to say.
But that's where it's
I feel like most women probably have stories like that, or like like your story, or like mine, where we've gotten mad at our boyfriends and we, you know, out here just swinging on them and stuff like that. And we don't even recognize, like, we don't need to be doing that.
Like,
and,
don't, but we don't if recognize, the situation like, this were reversed, really, yes, yes.
And if, right. if it was reversed, and they were doing that to us, immediately, oh, I'm calling the police. Like, oh, you can't believe you put your hands on me. We have no problem, like, swinging off on a dude.
I can't imagine if I was to go to my brother and say, or my mother or my father or anyone and say, well, he slapped the dog shit out of me one time. And then to be like, well, Sheree, you know, it's like, no, it would be an immediate no, hell no, you lost your mind, you know what, let's go catch a baddie. It's like the things that we put on there, and it's like, that's the reason why we have to talk to the youth to understand that, like, just because you've been socialized to look at TV and think that, oh, like, you know, all these arguments, love and hip hop, I love trash TV.
Right.
Every once in a while. But like, every it does not while. Show a realistic relationship.
Not at all.
None of those that healthy not relationships. Be the role None of
model of a relationship.
Like, I shouldn't be sitting there like, all I got to do is fight you, fight her, fight everybody. And I'm like,
over my man. No.
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 Like, I'm about to go with, like, I got to go cut a bitch. If I got to cut you to keep
it's not
you,
worth it. Then I don't want you. Then I don't want you.
Like, I ain't getting ready to be cutting you every other week. Okay. Right. But that makes a lot of sense to be able to understand, like we were talking about, knowing that to share those stories. Like, you said something else when you were talking about, like, allowing your son, allowing the children to heal from what they saw, and being open to hearing that. Mm-hmm. That's really important. And I think that's something that we, like you said, we as parents and we as adults silence children so much and minimize the things they've seen, because you ain't really see it. I provided for you. I gave you this, that, and the third. So you couldn't have had that bad of a child. Right, what you really see?
Right.
And invalidating the fact that it's like, yo, they've
been
fear, anxiety, things like that. Like, they, just because they don't know the words to say, like, we have a sophisticated language. It's important to just be like, yo, if they come to you, and I think that most of the time it's adults, when we, teens to adults, is kind of when you get that point of saying what you mean, you start to be, when they get into the place where they're an adult, they're like, well, that was fucked up.
Yeah, and you realize, like, what life could be or should be, and then you realize what you went through. You're like, oh, wait, in what in the world?
You're like, hold on, hey, Ma, like, you come to him and be like, hey, Ma, that's you have to be open.
I don't think you should be doing it.
Was he nice? You know, you're like, I remember these things. I've had to have those conversations with my parents. I grew up in with addiction, and I grew up with parents with addiction, and I've had to have those conversations where I'm like, it's not about guilt or shame. Like, I understand the concept of, like, at the time you were doing coping the best you could. I'm not, there's no judgment for me. But you have to recognize that if I say this was really messed up and this is how it affected me, you can't tell me that that's not how it affected me.
It's my experience. My experience is my experience. Exactly. And every experience needs to be validated, you know, not placing blame, but this is what happened and this is how it made me feel. And I think it's so important. But, I think Sasha asked me, what did your mom think? But when she did find out, my mother was broken. Like, I feel like I took her down, like, so low, because when she found out, she was like, why did you not tell me? Not so. And my thing was, I went a lot of years, like, thinking people would judge me, because they're like, well, how could you have let that happen to you when you knew what happened to your mom? But my mother was like, how could you not tell me? Of all people.
Knowing everything.
Knowing what I know, because my mother, like, I'll always say, my mother never took away from any of our experiences, and she did everything she could to make sure that we had a thriving life. Even being, you know, in a single mom, she did everything she could. I mean, my brother, I danced on the Academy Awards. My brother, he did all types of things. So we did so many great things as young people. But I was young, and I did not know where the place was to share what I felt or the fear that was within me. And at those times, we didn't have those type of conversations like, okay, but how did that affect you? Like the conversations we have now, or we know we've learned to have, we didn't have those conversations. So I didn't know where the place was to share my story. So I hid it. Like on the outside, I looked like I was thriving. Once we moved, my grades, I was a top student, number one in all of my classes, everything. Yeah. Like, so you would think that this was the best the
perfect
move.
Life.
Right, right. So she's thriving. My brother was thriving. So you never would know that I was still living with that fear inside of me and that insecurity. And it just like swallowed me up. So then, like you said, when that first man came, he was 29 years old. I was 19. And he was like,
he was already.
I want you, right. Like he had the right shoes on. He knew how to dress. He had that smile that, you know, like glitters, like when you smile. That was it for me. That was it.
And see, the thing is, like, you literally was like, oh my gosh, I want to say, arrived.
I think that's part of it. I think that's part of it too, though. The fact that you were 19 and he was 29, like that is part of the whole makeup. People who tend to be abusers prey on younger people, on inexperienced people, because they know they're easier to manipulate. They're easier to gain their trust. They're easier to be fearful. You mentioned at the beginning about financial abuse. Like it's easier to take someone and say, oh, I'm going to spoil you with all this money. And then nope. Like if you don't do this, now I'm going to take it away. Now this lifestyle that you're used to is not going to happen. So like I think, you know, that be careful talking to them older dudes. Like if you and your teens, don't be out here trying to go for people who are in their 30s. They nasty.
And the thing
they are not good for you.
And also we have to remember that it's gradual. And gradual is it. It's not like they give you a windfall of everything and then take it all away. It's like it'll be, hey, you know what? You don't need to work. It's always framed in a beautiful way. I don't want my woman to work. I believe that I should take care. And you're just like, I do want to be kept. I'm the man. And I do want to be kept. I should let me go shopping. He get me everything I need. Not realizing that those are the things it sets up because it's nothing wrong with that. It's nothing wrong with someone who wants to be taken, who wants to take care of you. It's what happens when you try to assert your independence and how they react. That's what lets you know what's the flag. Is the flag red? Because if it's the red flag, it's this one. If I say I want to go and get a job and you flip the fuck out, okay. All right.
Or I want to go to school or I want to do something to better myself. Right? It's always about power and control. And it's that power and control wheel where they'll use all forms of it. So you got to be mindful. They'll use forms from whether it's financial abuse, it's verbal abuse. It's sometimes if you're in a relationship with somebody and you have children with them, they try to use the children as well. You know, so it's so many different ways, but in everything, they're always looking to, if they don't have power, they're trying to seek it. If they lose power, they're trying to gain it back. It's always about power and control with the abusers. And it starts young, like young people, they start out young doing these things and manipulating each other. And then therefore they grow into abusers and manipulators and sociopaths and all types of, you know.
And they don't understand, like when we talk about like, oh, and like, cause all of us have, like, we've talked about the idea that I want to look good for me, but then I do want to look good because like I get my nails and hair and things done because I want to look good, but it's nice that my husband likes it. When if he was to sit there and be like, you don't need to wear that. All right. So he's never been able to say that. And I remember he's talked about like how his, bless his soul, my father-in-law was controlling in different ways. And so he was always scared that he would be like him. And I said, well, sweetie, let you know that you might be like your father and have those streaks that you're scared of. I am like my mother and I know who she is. And they would never be together because they are definitely too headstrong. So I said, I'll let you know when you cross the line. Blessed. My husband, should I tell you the story about how he tried to, when he crossed the line in the trying to tell me what to do? Oh, bless you. So I was like, I'm gonna get my hair done. I used to have a male hairdresser. They do wonderful hair.
Yes,
but
they do.
I used to have a male hairdresser. And I remember my boyfriend at the time, now husband, Brandon was like, I mean, I'll pay to get your hair done. You ain't getting your hair done by no man. And I looked over him and I said, huh? what are you talking about? I was confused because I was like, what do you mean?
Really?
And he was like, and he was legitimately dead set on like, you can't get your hair done by a man and I'll be damned and it's sensual and this. I said, are they doing their hair? Are they doing my hair with their penis? I'm confused. Right. What's happening? What do you think happens at a hair appointment? This is my mother and his father. Think about that, because he's like, you're not going to get your hair done. You paying for my hair, all you're doing is being the bank. You're not telling me what I'm doing with it or who I'm going to. Right. Like, you don't get your hair done. And he was dead set. I just looked at him and I said, you remember when I told you I would let you know if you crossed the line? This is that line, sweetie.
This
is that moment. And he was like, nah. And I said, I'm going to give you a moment to gather your thoughts and realize that that doesn't make sense. And I left it alone. And I was like, he tripping. I remember calling someone and saying, oh, he tripping. Y'all should talk to him because he's tripping. And you know what he did? And this is his redeeming quality, because he always thinks that I bag on him, but he called and was like, I was tripping. I was wrong. I didn't realize how that was. And I said, and that is the redeeming quality of a healthy relationship, that people like think. He was tripping. Now, I was like, I'm going to give him a moment to realize that he tripping, because I was like, you're not going to tell me where to get my hair done. And he was like, I was tripping. I need to not do that again, because I don't have no right to say that. And I said, thank you. We can move on.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. But what you say back to of the healthy relationships is being able to, because we're not always right. We're not always going to get it right. And there's opportunity for us to recover, but we have to be mature enough to want to say, I did wrong. And now I want to figure it out and fix it and get it right together. That's a big part of it's because there's redemption. It's being with someone who's going to accept that. Yeah. We're not going to always get it right. I'm willing to say I did it wrong and let's fix it and repair it.
Yeah. So just to kind of close out the show, I just wanted to ask you.
It's been a minute.
I know it's a good conversation though. We could just keep going. But I wanted to ask you, as somebody, you know, who came from teen violence and who now, you know, tries to help young women and young boys to not be in those situations, what are some red flags as parents that we can look for in our children? Because, you know, teenagers don't tell their parents everything, and teenagers don't want to tell their parents if they're going through things like that. So what should we as parents be looking for if we're worried that our children have put themselves in situations that aren't good for them?
So the first thing I would say is to be mindful of their behavior, because like certain children, especially girls, they might have an outgoing personality, and all of a sudden your personality starts to change. They start to become more reserved, more quiet, like just outside of their, you know, not their personality, not their selves. Mm-hmm. The second thing is be mindful of, like I always say, be mindful of who your children are talking to. Like, don't assume that because your child is a good child that they're surrounding themselves with good people, because often not so good children or people want to prey on those who are good people and try to bring them in. So always be mindful of who your friends are, who their friends are, who their friends' friends are, because I'm all in my, I'm like, yeah, we want to go out. Y'all want to go out? Okay, let's all go out together. Like,
my mother knew every single one of my friends' parents as well as their friends. My mother could tell me whether she liked or disliked someone within the first two meetings, and I was just like, mom, she didn't care.
Right. For girls, make sure, like, be mindful, like, if they're wearing clothes that hide their body, hide their skin, because they could be hiding bruises. So if you know if it's like, you know, 80 degrees outside, but they're wearing long sleeves or something like that, that's something to be mindful of, because that means they might be hiding something. That's definitely a clue. Again, how the digital, like with the digital abuse, be mindful of who they're communicating with, how much time they're spending, and when they're online, who they're spending time with online, and who they're looking, you know, like who they're talking to online, because they could be, you know, it could be a form of digital abuse where somebody's actually not somebody physically abusing them, but over the internet abusing them. So I think as a parent, it's our responsibility to, in a lovingly way, engage with our children. I think at some point, we know as parents, as children get older, we give them a lot more freedom than they should be allowed, honestly.
Yeah.
I feel like now, especially because they grew up, they're exposed to so much more younger, that we feel like they're more mature, but they're not necessarily mature. They just know more information.
Yes.
Or they have access to more information. And it's our responsibility, it's our duty as parents to be in their business. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Be in their business. Like, know what's going on with their life. That, and the other thing is, like I said, build community, because your children, like you said, Sasha, they might not want to talk to you, but have safe spaces for people that they trust that they can talk to. So my son might not feel comfortable talking to me about certain things, but he'll go to his father, he'll go to my yes. brother, he'll go to somebody else. But it's creating that safe community of people. Yes. So, and don't be offended if they don't come to you, because yeah,
that's a big
do
one.
Not be offended if they don't come to you, as long as they go to someone like a guidance yeah. counselor or something. Mm-hmm. Don't be offended that it didn't come through you. Just be grateful that the conversation was had with somebody that you trust. So always just make sure you have communities of trust. Engage with your school guidance counselors, teachers. Like, I am so, me and my mom are so involved in my son's school. It's crazy. His junior high school, middle school, all mm-hmm. of the school. Like, be engaged, be involved.
Teachers see everything.
They know all absolutely. Of it.
Cause my
God. I remember when you're in high school, you don't think that your teachers give two shits about whatever's going on. Like, you just like, they
you not think they don't see nothing.
They know.
They know everything.
They see all of
my
it.
Teachers everything. Can tell me my teachers are my best resource for my kids. Mm-hmm. When I go to them, they can tell me when they was dating this person, when they right. broke up, who they right. started talking to before, who they was talking to the year before. I was like, right. how do you keep this in your brain? You have like 100, you have 300 students. How do you even know about this one
right.
and
all
remember
it.
This? They remember it. So you're right. I think that the one thing that you said that really resonated with me is like keeping that open communication and mm-hmm. that non-judgmental open communication right. where it's like, you might not be the person for that person for them, but knowing that they can come to you.
Right.
It's so important.
And I'll go back to, like you said, to the teacher thing. I can't stress that enough, because especially if you find teachers that you work well with, they care about your kids, connect with them, because even when they see things off with your children, yes. they'll let you know. So mm-hmm. it's like, don't be afraid to engage with the people who really support your children throughout yes. their day. Like, it's okay. Yes. Like, I always say partnership is everything. And I believe in partnering with people, especially when it came to my son, you know, Boy Scout leaders, like everybody's, I have a hovering over my child to make sure that he's covered, because I can't be everywhere all the time.
And he don't even know it.
Mm. He don't even know.
You don't even know.
Right.
You're just a shadow.
Us to build that for our kids. Like, we need to create a society where they feel safe. And that's the best thing that I can say. As a parent, always make sure that your child feels safe. And like I said, they might feel safe with you, but they don't feel comfortable having certain conversations. Don't be offended if the conversation is had with somebody else. Just be grateful that the conversation was had.
That's, period.
Yep.
That's awesome.
Amen.
So much. Yolanda, you have been amazing. This has been such a good episode.
Yes. Thank
you so thank much you.
For being on the show.
Thank you for having me.
You can find Yolanda. She is on Instagram at love_fearless_inc. Her website is Live Fearless.
Live Fearless Inc. Yes.
Said love, girl.
That's all right. I love too. Bad.
Yes.
I was reading it. My bad.
Sasha, don't say that.
Live Fearless Inc.
Right.
And then live_fearless_inc on Instagram.
Inc. Yes.
Thank you, so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much. You guys are fantastic.
We would love to hear from you guys if you have any, if you want to share your story, we would love to hear, like, if you've experienced this while you were growing up or recently as an adult, if you have experienced this with your own children, you can always join the conversation that I'm sure is happening on Instagram right now at Swirl and Sip Podcast. You can email us at hello@swirlandsippodcast.com. If you want to be a member of our Sip Squad and you want to see this amazing conversation with this woman who does not look her age at all, you can join our SIP squad.
She doesn't.
But you can join our SIP squad at patreon.com/swirlandsip. podcast. It's only $3 a month, guys. The lowest one is $3 a month. It's as little as a cup of coffee, and we would love to have you. We do fun behind the scenes things. We have our Vino Corners where we talk more about the wines that we're drinking on some episodes. So that's patreon.com/swirlandsippodcast. Make sure that you subscribe, like, rate, and review the podcast on all your major podcast platforms. It helps others find the show, and we really want people to hear amazing conversations like this, because we do try to talk about things that aren't always talked about, but we do feel it's important. So make sure that the rating and the reviewing definitely helps us out. And as always, make sure you have your wine glasses ready for next week's episode.
Bye.
Bye-bye.